Bankless Nation, it is the fourth week of August. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. It's roll-up time. David, the Democrats dropped their 90-page policy platform. I'm sure they
mentioned crypto how many times?
Yeah. We're not going to spoil it, okay? We got to
get
to the details.
We're not going to spoil everyone. Guess your number. Think of a number right now. How many times was crypto mentioned?
Yeah, and the question, of course, this week as well as the last was this the week for the Kamala crypto pivot? Or here's the other side of this. Maybe she's going to nominate Gary Gensler for Secretary Treasury.
Oh,
two polar opposites.
which one is happening? Also, in the world of crypto, why Optimism disabled their fraud proofs? Good, bad, why is that even possible? What happens next? Why do they do that? And the new meta in crypto this week, Tron. All the meme coin traders are bridging over to Tron. And if you are hearing that line right now and you're like, ooh, I better get on Tron, you're probably too late.
Speaking of meme coins, we got to talk about the Grimace coin, David. Is it a scam or is this something real that McDonald's has posted to their Instagram?
From McDonald's Instagram. Scam or real? Everyone place your bet. Scam or real?
David, these headlines, man. It's one of those weeks. But at least we got this. And you're going to have to wait till the end of the podcast. Finally, Vitalik makes an Ethereum bull post on Twitter. Maybe the ETH Bitcoin ratio is saved, David. Maybe there's some hope here.
That's Vitalik doing his best to save the Bitcoin ETH Bitcoin ratio. I'm also doing my part, announcing that me and Kane Warwick are fighting.
Is this going to save Ethereum? Like fighting,
apparently,
actual fight.
This Ethereum and Ethereum fighting. Yeah, karate combat. It was once upon a time Nick Carter, but now Nick Carter, he's just like way out of my league. He's already killed a guy.
well, he has not killed a guy.
and so I'm committing elder abuse. By fighting Kane Warwick at Permissionless on October 11th, the last day of Permissionless. Yeah, so the fight's on, getting back out of retirement that I never got out of in the first place to fight Kane Warwick. So if that interests you, if two crypto Twitter people fighting at Permissionless interests you, you should get a ticket.
I mean, that's another reason to go to Permissionless, of course, is to see you beat up Kane Warwick, right? Which is obviously going to happen. Let's get the polymarket
okay,
ready for that one.
To be fair, Kane has 30 pounds on me. He's like 6'2". I'm like 5'10". He's got like 3 to 4 inches on me. He is a bigger human than me.
Yeah.
But he's agreeing to come down to, we're fighting at 175. So I'm going up 15. He's going down 15.
Going to be down 15. It's all going to be like lean muscle. If I know Kane, I mean, he's a competitive dude.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was talking to him about potentially doing that, he was waiting for Suzu to get back to him about potentially fighting. But Suzu, being the spineless fraud that he is, just ghosted him. And so he gave Suzu like 72 hours and then Suzu didn't say anything. And so then he's like, okay, now we're going to fight, now down to fight. I'm just trying to like close my saga on the like 2 months of training that I did with Nick. I did that. Yeah. And now I would like to put that to use, even though I haven't done anything since
All right.
Kane has much less fighting experience. I'm assuming, but he's also apparently in really good shape because he's been like free diving he's in the best shape of his life in cardio terms. And so I've got fighting experience. He's got cardio like readiness, and we've got 7 weeks to train.
That's not a lot of time, David. And I know you're in Argentina. It's going to take you a while to get back to New York.
I'm not going to join an MMA gym in Argentina. I got to wait until I get back to New York. So I have
all
5 weeks.
All right. Well, we'll see what the odds look like once the prediction markets kind of release them. But okay. If who wins, which one's bullish for Ethereum? Or is it just like bullish for Ethereum that we're having this fight? Is that how you save the ratio?
I don't know, man. Okay. It's just something.
Well, if that wasn't reason enough to come to Permissionless to watch David beat up Kane, then we've got a lineup here, which is an incredible lineup. David, you should name a few guests. I know Chris Dixon is top of my list. Also, Balaji, Srinivasan. Mm-hmm. Who else we got, though?
The Permissionless lineup, I think, is one of the greatest lineups of a crypto conference that I've ever seen. Keone from Monad, Sriram, of course. Ben Jones from Optimism. Nick White from Celestia. Harry from Arbitrum. Luca from Pudgy Penguins. Kane, of course. Vance from Framework. Tommy from Delphi. Santi from Empire Podcast and previously Parify. Haseeb, Tom Schmidt, Dan Robinson from Paradigm. Lucas from Jito. Tushar and Kyle from Multicoin. Like, who else do you want? Oh, do you want Stani? Because we also have Stani. What else? Who else do you want? Samara Cohen from BlackRock, like the queen of the ETFs. Like, we got everyone. We got everyone. It's going to be really, really cool. 3 days, a lot of content.
There's somebody else on this list too. I'd rather see you fight. You should go fight Mert, David. Was that not an option?
I do not. I will not be fighting Mert. Will not be fighting Mert.
Well, of course, guys, if you don't have a ticket for permissionless, you can go grab one. There's a link in the show notes. And if you're a bankless citizen, you get, 30% off that ticket?
30% off. So bankless, bankless listeners, non-citizens, get 10% off. Bankless 10. Bankless citizens get 30% off on your guys' perks page where we put all of your guys' perks.
Amazing. All right. Well, let's talk about markets this week, David. The Bitcoin markets, what's the price point? Are we above 60K? Looks like we are.
Yep. Holding head and shoulders above 60K, 60,600, up 2% on the week. ETH price started the week at 2,640, ending the week 2,610, down 1% on the week. Call it flat for both, I would say. ETH Bitcoin ratio, not doing great at 0.043. But we won't talk about that. The Ether flows, the ETF flows are terrible. They're pretty bad. Not They're not great. They have been negative since August 15th. And so negative 40 million on the 15th, negative 15 million on the 16th, negative 13 million on the 19th, negative 6 million on the 20th, and negative 18 million on the 21st. Wow. Oof.
Yeah.
Totaling. Of all time, since inception, negative $458 million. Yikes.
This was a bad week for net outflows of Ethereum. So like, when you say inflows, outflows, like not great, I mean, historically, they've been pretty good. I mean, if you look at all of the ETFs, ETH is like number five in terms of your best top performing
total
ETFs.
Total new inflows, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem is, particularly this week, we got absolutely slammed with a whole bunch of outflows. All of that, of course, coming from Grayscale, Ether. Yep. So you could
it's all
say,
coming from Grayscale.
Yeah, you could say, look, it's just, you know, accelerating. This needed to happen anyway. But the net of it is, like, last week when we were saying these numbers, we were at, you know, 360 net outflows, right? We want to get that to zero, and then we want to get that to positive territory. This week, we're at 460 million net outflows. So that's not feeling great. Do you think some of the bears were right that, like, institutional investors don't care about Ethereum?
Well, I will say, granted, the amount of time that we were all surprised about the Bitcoin outflows from the GBTC when the Bitcoin ETFs launched, that was about 2 weeks of outflows and like dashed expectations about the Bitcoin ETFs. And then things reversed. And we are at two plus like a little over 2 weeks, 2 weeks. We started on the 5th. We were at the 22nd. So like it's about the same amount of time before things reverse for Bitcoin before, and also when the GBTC hole really got plugged. On the bright side of things, ETH A from BlackRock passed $1 billion in total inflows.
That's big.
So $1.4 billion of total inflows into the BlackRock ETF. Fidelity doing great at 375, Bitwise doing great at 310, and then like almost like no third, fourth place. VanEck is in fourth at 60 million, but it's really those three contenders here.
I guess I would say it's probably still too soon to tell would be the TLDR of whether this has been bullish or bearish, but it hasn't been bearish yet. I mean, I don't think the data is fully in. We just had a bad week, let's say, on that side of things. Total crypto market cap, 1.2 trillion, about flat from last week, I think. David.
2.2 trillion. That's why I do it.
Oh, did I get it wrong? It's 1.1? Yes. It's 1.2 trillion?
It's 2.2 trillion.
I was looking at this. What is this? Oh, this is Bitcoin. Yeah, that's why you do it, David.
See,
I was looking.
Yes, this is why I do
Bitcoin
it.
Bitcoin is 1.2 trillion and total crypto market cap is 2.2. I can't believe I just like lost a trillion.
Ryan
in there,
just became,
you know,
a Bitcoin maxi. Temporary Bitcoin maxi.
Everything else is shitcoin. There's only Bitcoin. Okay, well, I'm doing this section for you, David, because I know you are an enthusiastic Tron shiller like pumper. And so, and this is not
it's
like
known.
I'm being a little facetious here, but like, David, actually lately you've been DMing me and you've been like, hey, do you see what's going on with Tron? Like, well, you should buy some Tron. Like, we should get some Tron. And you've been doing it on justifiable reasons, which is you say the fundamentals are great. I don't know if your experience in Argentina is also confirming this, like if people in Argentina are actually using Tron, but here's Tron on the 7-day. 20% up, one of the top movers, number four, just behind Aave, which also had a great week, and Polygon. But let's talk about Tron. Okay, In your words, explain to me, why is Tron doing things in the market?
This week or this year? Like, pick a time frame for me, because there's two different answers depending on the
Well,
the
are
frame.
You bullish on the week or are you bullish on the year, David?
I'm more bullish on the year than I am on the week.
Then there you go. Let's pick that time
frame. Tron on the year is doubled. It started, and even, so going back 2 years, so like call it January 2023, so a year and a half, Tron was at 5 cents, it's currently at 15 cents. So it's 3x'd in 18 months. Strong outperforming the market. Hasn't outperformed Solana, but it's outperformed basically everything else. On like just very strong network-based activity, largely stable coin transfers, and a lot of TRX being burnt. $271 million of Tron was burnt over the last year. How much ETH was burnt in net, Ryan, over the last year, would you say, do you think?
Wait, what's the number for Tron?
$271 million of Tron was net burnt over the last 12 months. How much ETH was net burnt over the last year?
$400 million.
We issued.
Yes.
$12 million. We issued 12 million. Ether was net inflationary year over year, whereas Tron burnt $271 million of Tron on dominantly stable coin transfer volumes.
Are you saying
all over the world? And so this is like not really activity in Europe. Maybe it's a little bit in Europe, not actual activity at all in the United States, but like Eastern Europe, South America, Africa, like in Argentina, Tron is like the dominant blockchain for stablecoin payments. I think I mentioned this on the podcast, the Weekly Roll-Up not too long ago. Tarun Chitra was in the country of Georgia not too long ago. And he said the whole country of Georgia just runs on Tether on Tron. And so this is how Tron has just like performed an outsized amount of just burning from network activity.
Yeah, and you're saying burning, right? So it's just fees, and burning. Then they burn a portion of that fees. Yep. That's why I was getting a little wrapped up. But it's actually just like total fees is impressive. So here's a chart for you on Token Terminal. David, Tron is in pink here. So Ethereum in kind of this aqua type color. And Ethereum was crushing Tron in terms of total fees generated.
During the bull market.
Yeah, well, during the bull market, was that a bull market? During March, you know, April, earlier in the year.
The ghost market.
Well, you can see it's all Ethereum, right? In terms of fees generated. And then Pink starts to take over for the past 3 to 6 months. And now Pink is like dominant. So let's see. At the beginning of the last 90 days, Tron was pulling in just 44% of the revenue. Now Tron accounts for a staggering 93% of the top five chains revenue. 93%.
Ethereum, Bitcoin, Solana, Binance Chain, Tron. Tron accounts for 93% of the revenue.
All right.
And so this is why I've been pinging Bankless Ventures, being like, hey, we should just like buy, guys, we should buy some Tron. We should put some Tron. We don't gotta tell anyone. Like, no one needs to know.
Fundamentals. Fundamentals is your use case here. And then also, let me give you another explanation for why Tron is up, maybe on the week or maybe
Okay, the week news is very different.
Okay, this is sunpump.meme. You remember pump.fun?
I do remember.
Solana has that going on. It's still going. Well, Justin Sun, not to be outdone, has sunpump.meme. And it's doing some activity here. Look, here's a Doom board.
It's incentivizing. They are incentivizing memes on Tron. So there is like over $200,000, $300,000 of a prize pool based on performances of specific coins.
Yeah.
There's also a partnership between sunpump.fun and Poloniex, a centralized exchange. So if you launch a meme coin on Sunpump and it maintains $1 million of trading volume for 3 days in a row, it will get listed on Poloniex.
There, David. You feel good about that now? You feel good about Tron? It's just all meme coins and pumps.
Damn it, dude. I was really having fun with my stablecoin fundamentals. You know, and then we get meme coins.
I mean, we poke at Tron on the level of decentralization, et cetera. That's all, you know. And Justin Sun, you could say all sorts of things about him, of course. You could say all sorts of things. But one thing that is impressive, you are right, is the fundamentals. Like, people, users are actually using it. It's actually generating revenue. So you can't take that away. That's all in the on-chain data.
And I think the meme coins are actually like the much less dominant price mover. It's the local price mover for this week because like it's getting some marginal new capital, marginal new users. Say what you will, there has been 250,000 new addresses in the last 24 hours on Tron. And so that's kind of responsible for the short-term price action. But really the big iceberg under the water is just like the fact that Tron is like the world's stablecoin payment provider.
Well, David, the meme coins aren't enough to restore investor sentiment in crypto, at least not yet. But, you know, the stock market's doing pretty well when it comes to sentiment. Mm-hmm. So it was just a few weeks ago, earlier in August, was that August 4th, August 5th, we got that like massive drop on a regular Sunday and then into Monday in the stock market. And the markets, the NASDAQ, S&P 500, all swaying into extreme fear territory. Well, we are back to neutral in the stock market on fear and greed index market sentiment. So stock market's kind of feeling good, willing to let the yen carry trade shenanigans just like, you know.
Gone.
It's gone. About it. It's gone. We forgot it's gone. About it. Yeah, it's gone. Yep. At least, you know, resume the bull. And Jerome Powell, you know, it looks like he's cutting rates in September. That has not been the same with crypto. So we are still in the fear territory in crypto, kind of lagging behind. Not extreme fear at this point in time, but still kind of fearful.
I think people are kind of just worried that like crypto just doesn't have momentum and we're losing momentum. And if we don't have, if we can't continue to go up, then like, then therefore we go down. At least like, doesn't have to be that way, but traders might make it become that way. Like, oh, we stopped going up, let's sell. And then you have like another like liquidation candle. Like sometimes that's how crypto markets work.
Do these people not see progress that we're making on sunpump.me?
how dare they deny the innovations that we have?
All right, we got more coming up. The Democrats had their national convention this week. So did it include a crypto? I hope you have that number in your head of how many times crypto was mentioned in the policy. Also, the Harris campaign did say something about crypto on the week. Was this a pivot or is Gary Gensler going to be the new Secretary of the Treasury? Also, some metrics for you, David. Do you know how much ETH Trump holds? Do you know?
Not very, very much not zero amount.
Well, yeah, we're going to give you that not zero amount in the next section. He's also like this on-chain entrepreneur with tons of recurring revenue. So we'll talk about that too. We'll get to all of that. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our recommended exchange, which is Kraken.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. The Uniswap extension is here. The self-custody wallet created by the most trusted team in DeFi, Uniswap Labs, designed to make swapping feel effortless. This extension lives in your browser's sidebar, letting you swap, sign transactions, and send or receive crypto without ever losing your place on the internet. Plus, with human-readable transaction messages, you'll always know exactly what you're signing. Navigate a multi-chain world effortlessly with support for 11 chains like Ethereum Mainnet, Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. No more chain switching or token importing. All your assets are right where you need them to be. The Uniswap extension is designed to level up your swapping experience with other Uniswap Labs products as well. Easily onboard to the extension using the Uniswap mobile wallet to begin managing your assets across platforms and take advantage of smooth, seamless synergies with the Uniswap web app. So go and download the Uniswap extension today by clicking the link in the show notes. Just another way Uniswap is helping you swap smarter.
Democrats had their national convention this week. News media was abuzz, and they released their 94-page policy platform. I've got the index here, David. So the answer to how many
times... Yeah, I'm sure you read every single word, right? Between you and I, you're the reader.
I read a few words. Not every single word, but I did do a nice control F to search for a keyword, which is crypto. So yes. How many times, David, did crypto... was crypto mentioned in this policy paper?
Drum roll. Zero times.
Zero.
It was zero times.
Yep.
Zero times. What about Bitcoin?
Bitcoin had zero times. Yep.
Zero times. What about blockchain? What about blockchain?
Also zero. Do you want to give me some more?
Digital assets.
Zero.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, man, I'm out of ideas.
It's all of them. Yeah. No tokens. Nothing. Nothing bad about crypto. Just like nothing at all. Just complete silence.
Well, okay. Inside of the Kamala campaign, Democratic status quo, bad. Like nothing is bad. Nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
bad.
That's how we have to interpret it. Because I mean, yeah. Nothing means. Yeah, more of the same, which is bad. Yeah. Now, some people are saying, look, this is a party platform document that was created before Kamala Harris, took the nominee position. Yeah, right. So this is under Biden, mm-hmm. basically. So it doesn't include all of the changes that Kamala might make. So maybe there's some opportunity for a refresh. But they touch right. on a lot. They talk about corporate greed, housing, education, foreign policy, nothing on crypto. I'm a little jealous, though, because there is an AI section here. Look at this. Seizing the promise and managing the risks of AI. This is one of the sections I did read. I got to say, it's not necessarily great.
Is it positive towards AI, or is it more like AI safety stuff?
There are
Is it D-cell or A-cell?
It feels more D-cell than A-cell to me.
Okay.
It's basically the first line is AI holds extraordinary potential for both promise and peril. See, promise and peril. So they're trying to split right. the difference here, but
they kind of do both. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then the remaining focus paragraphs mainly focus on the peril part of things. So definitely a little bit different.
I interpret that as the bellwether for tech in general. And if they have a biased D-cell towards AI, they're going to have a biased D-cell towards crypto even more so.
Yeah. There was somebody who said, okay, well, point me to the Republican platform before you get upset, start pearl clutching around this. And the Republicans actually do have a platform on crypto. They have a paper.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's not long, but it is good. So what Republicans in their platform on crypto, they say, we will defend the right to mine Bitcoin and ensure every American has the right to self-custody of their digital assets and transact free from government surveillance and control. So nothing versus this statement.
Compare and contrast.
It's a little
Ooh,
bit better.
Yikes.
And I got to say, I was actually expecting something. I was actually expecting
something. Oh, you were?
All
right. You were expecting crypto to be in here.
I was expecting, it's 94 pages, dude. Like,
right.
AI got a section. I was expecting something like the AI section, promise and peril, to be mm-hmm. stated about crypto. Some good, some bad, but like something. So the silence has been kind of unnerving. And here's the context, David, is crypto has never been more politically active than this year.
Right.
I feel like we've shown Democrats votes. I think we've shown money. We've educated
For
many
sure.
of the policymakers on crypto policy. And this feels like, again, the silence does feel like a doubling down on anti-crypto. So that is what it is.
So to put my head inside of like the Kamala campaign, for whatever I can do that, they still want Kamala to be generic Democrat. They want to be like, they kind of want to position her as like as normal as possible. Same thing with the Vice President Tim Walz pick, like just
I agree.
High school football coach, just be normal. And so the policy that they have is like just middle of the road Democrat stuff. Just like, hey, Democratic Party, like here's our party stance. It's what you guys expect and want. And I think if I was like generic Democrat, like active political person, and I saw like crypto in there, I'd be like, what's that doing there? Like, that's weird. Like, I don't think she's trying, or the whole campaign, the whole party is like sticking their neck out about anything. So like adding anything new, crypto or not, would be like a weird move for them, because they are just trying to be very like no sharp edges, just like generic Democrat. And so that kind of fits in that whole thing. I don't think we're going to see anything. We're not going to know anything about Kamala until if she gets elected. And then we're going to see what she does about crypto. And then I think everyone is like rightfully worried that like, yeah, it's probably not going to be good.
Yeah. I think this is a sign that this is going to be status quo, right? The fact that like I can see that case for why she wouldn't say anything about crypto or anything big, but like in a policy document in like 94 pages of the Democrats' policy, it's not, they can't feign ignorance this time. I mean, Trump has made it a major political issue. There was the SAB 121 veto that Biden, like, they're very aware that crypto is a subject in public consciousness. At least they're aware of this kind of like single issue crypto voter force and everything the industry is doing to kind of like push back on these policies, and they say nothing to me. I mean, you could I sort of interpret that as a spit in the face. Like, I interpret this as like we're keeping the status quo policy, and like we're just totally ignoring what's going on the other side. So, I mean, everyone can interpret this differently. And there was also this rumor floating around, which just like fits too perfectly, I think, with the narrative here, which is Kamala Harris is likely to nominate Gary Gensler as Secretary Treasury if elected. Okay. So if you think crypto, if you think Kamala Harris campaign is kind of spitting on the face of the industry, this is definitely a headline that sends you to full fear, panic. Oh my God, our arch nemesis, Gary Gensler, as the Secretary of Treasury, isn't this what he always wanted? Imagine that. And so my first question on this is a publication called the Washington Reporter.news, is, okay, is this true? This was a rumor circulating all around crypto Twitter. So I asked this publicly on Twitter.
Breaking. Yeah. Kamala nominates Gary Gensler as secretary. It's totally the truth. Don't, like, no source. Here's a picture.
Yeah, yeah. from the insiders and people I've talked to, David, it doesn't look like this is likely at all. That this is probably one of those things. Yeah.
The quote in here says, in an interview with The Reporter, Tom Emmer previously warned that Harris may pick Gensler or Senator Warren to serve as her Secretary of Treasury. That's the news. Yeah. That's not, that was the rumor. Like, well, it's not that like we heard anything new. It's like one time this one guy said that she might do this.
Yes.
And that's what turned into a breaking tweet around Twitter. And then every like crypto Twitter being very viral and like knee jerky was like, Kamala is the worst thing to ever happen to crypto because she's going to nominate Gary Gensler as the Treasury Secretary.
It fits the narrative perfectly.
It fits the narrative so well. It's fake news. It's just straight up fake news.
It seems like it's fake news. And it's probably the type of news that's put out by a like political campaign injected in the media so that it goes viral. So now there's that seed of doubt.
It's malicious fake news.
It's
right?
Not it's, like...
And targeting the virality of crypto Twitter and people's wanting to confirm their own bias.
Yeah. I should say it's probably not a 0% probability. I mean, anything could happen.
Oh, certainly not.
You never know. But the idea that this is a serious contender for this position, I don't think that's ever been true, and certainly hasn't been true this week, at least according to everything that we're seeing. In the wake of this, though, David, there was a bright spot. So there's this news headline here. This is in Bloomberg Crypto. Vice President Kamala Harris will back measures to help grow digital assets, a policy advisor to her campaign said, highlighting efforts to court an emerging cryptocurrency industry. And the headline here is, if I can get past the paywall... The headline here is something to the effect of Harris supports policies to expand the crypto industry, said. So this is like a breaking of the silence. This has not happened from the Kamala campaign. This happened like Wednesday the 21st. It's a real statement. A real statement, a real post in Bloomberg. The question is, what does it mean? You have any takes on what it means?
Is it real, though? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. So the guy who made the statement, his name is Brian Nelson. By the way, David, do you ever use Perplexity.ai?
I have started to recently use Perplexity.
It's so much better than Google, right? So like you asked the question of like, I asked, who is Brian Nelson? That's this aide to the Kamala Harris campaign. So he's formerly in the Biden administration. And then what's his position on crypto? And the summary was just fantastic. Nelson's position appears to be one of cautious engagement with the crypto industry, focusing on addressing potential risks and illicit activities while recognizing the need for clear regulations. He's the type of guy to come to crypto conferences, to take crypto calls. This is a source from him at Consensus. This is Brian Nelson. And he gave a talk at Consensus in the wake of Tornado Cash. It was very much we don't want to destroy crypto innovation, but look, AML KYC is necessary and all actors need to play by those rules. It's that type of comfort. So it's not like comforting, okay? But he is not someone who's previously ignored crypto. He attends the events and like as kind of the
being at a crypto conference is like a huge like gold star from me.
He's
an aide to the Kamala campaign.
Yeah, he's an aide, and he's former Biden administration on the
This is our fucking guy. This is how we get him. This is our end.
It's not. I don't think it is at all. I think he's actually kind of an AML KYC maxi, kind of a, you know, that type of person.
He's not a foot in the door?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe there's hope. I got to say, we've seen no evidence yet again, another week that's gone by, of a Kamala pivot. And of course, even these statements are just statements. There's nothing really substantial behind them. So that's the story, man. Oh, do you want to get a Nick Carter tweet on all this?
Sure.
He says, from VP Harris, look, I understand that I'm currently in power and have the ability to change literally anything regarding our max hostile anti-crypto policy. But instead of doing that, I'm going to make an extremely vague promise about potentially changing things later. Maybe that's his cynical take on what the Kamala campaign is doing here.
Okay. The anti take to that is that like Kamala's the vice president, not the president. And as vice president, you only have as much power as the president lets you have. And so like there might be a chance take is that like, well, Biden's not going to do anything because like, why would he? Like he's in his whatever few months left. And then Kamala might actually pivot, but Biden isn't like the Biden administration is the way to go. But like this is what I'm saying. If Kamala gets elected, And it hasn't been with the support of the crypto industry, she's not going to then pivot.
I know.
Like, well, she's already
this
in
is
power.
The
like,
point of maximum leverage
wants.
Is right now.
Is right
which
now.
Is so yeah. Which is so extremely disappointing for anyone who has hoped and dreamed of making crypto bipartisan, where you have both parties fully support
parties,
crypto as a
yes.
credibly neutral, like open democratic technology for the world and for the United States. And that doesn't look like that's happening. Maybe there's a sliver of a chance. You and I are talking to Ro Khanna tomorrow. So he is a crypto positive Democrat in Congress.
I think that's going to get us the best insight as to like what we can do here, what the status quo is, what are the state of things. I think that's the best conversation we're going to be able to have to like get a peek into like what's going on.
David, you want
to
know?
And like if you're a believer of just like, hey, in order to like truly reform the Democrats to be pro crypto, they need to lose this election and so they can rebuild. It's going to be the Ro Khanna Democrats that like rebuild the Democratic Party into the party that we want it to be in the crypto industry.
That is true. Yeah. So you got to maintain that dialogue. I mean, that's why we're having Ro Khanna on, obviously. Yeah. David, meanwhile, Trump is doing things on chain. He's making a lot of money on chain. Okay. Donald Trump.
In stark contrast.
He's the on chain entrepreneur of the year, maybe. I'm not sure. If you think of this as good, but apparently he released his financials, or at least some of his financials publicly. I'm not sure that this includes tax returns, but Blockworks put together this chart. This is how much Trump currently earns on both NFTs and on meme coins. I actually didn't know coins were actually paying Trump. I thought there was like a bunch of fake meme coins. But apparently there are some meme coins out there in which every time they're traded, he gets 2% to the Trump wallet.
And they're not his meme coins. He didn't launch the meme coins. It's other people's meme coins that, in order to gain legitimacy, pointed the tax to his wallet. Yeah, it took me a second to realize that.
We
have the
that.
Trump NFTs.
These are not official Trump meme coins then.
These are not official Trump. There's I think there's three or four of them. One of them is called Save America. Another one is called Trump Bucks. There's a few others as well. They pay a 2% tax on all transfers, not trades. Transfers. So if you transfer it, it like goes 2% goes to the Trump wallet. These meme coins have generated $354,000 in ETH over the past 4 months.
Wow.
For Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And then in addition to his meme coins, he's got $2.14 million of ETH from sales of his NFT collections, his three NFT collections,
that's
his
a lot
three
of
Trump
ETH.
Cards, along with $2 million more of royalty fees from secondary sales of these NFTs.
These are the NFTs. These are the ones that he gave kind of name, image license to. and gets royalties from this.
These are official Donald Trump NFTs. Yeah,
the meme coins are not. But what's the total of that? So he, apparently in total, all of his assets.
The supply is huge.
Yeah, not crypto assets, but in total, he has $635 million in assets, according to this. So not a billionaire, according to this.
How do we know that? How do we know that?
Well, that comes to these things right here.
Financial disclosure form.
Yeah, some financial disclosures.
I thought he was trying really hard to not give us that.
I don't know all the details here, but I think these financial disclosures are here, but everyone's asking for the tax forms and we don't have that. But we do have these financial disclosures. Right. So in summary, Trump has about $5 million in crypto. Most of that looks like it's Ether, at least the stuff we could see on chain. And it's a steady stream of revenue at this point. So it's daily. He's getting $4,000 to $5,000 a day at this point. Yeah. And it's more than the amount of revenue he's doing for The Apprentice. You know, the royalty to the Apprentice
or the
acting gigs he's done in the past. He was in Home Alone. So you get some royalties on that. It dwarfs all of those revenue sources at this point.
Yeah. So he gets 10% of royalty fees for his Trump cards. I actually think he gets Polygon. I think he gets Matic token because they're on Polygon.
I don't know, man. He's just the on-chain entrepreneur. Hard
Donald Trump
up.
Officially a Polygon bull.
What do we got coming up, David?
Coming up next, Optimism disabled their fraud proofs. Ruh-roh. What does that mean? Why is that a big deal? Or should you be concerned? McDonald's, the Instagram was hacked. Or maybe they just really wanted to launch Grimace Coin. I don't know. Was Grimace Coin a scam? I don't know. Place your bets. And also a $140 million raise for a new blockchain. That's not the valuation. That is how much cash went into the bank account for this new layer one blockchain that you totally need to know about. Haven't heard one about these in a while, but we're going to get to all of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. The Obol Collective is up and running and is maybe one of the most important collectives that you've never heard of. Obol is bringing distributed validators, or DVs, to the Ethereum staking stack. Distributed validators allow multiple parties of people running multiple nodes to create a single virtual Ethereum validator. Together, this makes participating in Ethereum consensus more accessible, more affordable, and more inclusive. It is a strict improvement to the Ethereum staking tech stack. With collaboration from Lido, EtherFi, EigenLayer, and 50 other entities, and thousands of individuals, the Obol Collective is working to scale and decentralize Ethereum using DVs. And now you can get involved. Introducing the Obol Contributions Program. Visit obol.org/bankless to stake on DVs, either through a partner staking protocol or at home. Earn access to future governance and ownership in Obol while contributing to retroactive funding for projects that are actively decentralizing Ethereum. This is your opportunity to secure inclusion in one of the most important projects working to scale Ethereum's foundation for future growth. Visit obol.org/bankless to get started. That's obol.org/bankless. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation.
The Optimism Foundation disabled permissionless fraud proofs. I thought they just enabled them. What happened here? What's the story? Mm-hmm.
There was a bug discovered in them. No funds were ever at risk. No funds were lost. A bug was discovered. And so they turned off the permissionless fraud proofs just so they could go and patch that bug.
And why are fraud proofs important?
Fraud proofs are the mechanism in which a layer two becomes like totally user sovereign, totally decentralized. If the sequencer is doing something that you do not like, you can use fraud proofs to prove fraud. If they are trying to push forward like an invalid state transition.
So if they try to steal your money, you have a fraud proof backup to be like, nope, yep. I can prove that was fraud and I actually can exit my funds on the layer one.
Exactly. So like because of all the state in a layer two, it gets like Merkleized, and then using a fraud proof, you can trace the Merkle on the Merkle tree, and then you can prove to the system, the fraud proof system, that like an invalid state transition happened on a particular leaf of a Merkle tree. And then you can, either slash the sequencer, withdraw your funds, some technical stuff. But it's what it takes in order to have like fully autonomous layer twos that preserve user sovereignty. They are brand new technology. Like Optimism was one of the first ones, is the first one to ship permissionless fraud proofs. Arbitrum has fraud proofs, but it's not permissionless. A committee can submit a fraud proof, but not like the general public. But fraud proofs are really hard. There's like a lot of edge cases. There's a lot of permutations. There's a lot of weird attack vectors. And so this was the first one. So kind of rolled back a security measure so they could patch it and then release it. I don't even know if like perfect fraud proofs are without a secondary measure are like an actual possibility. Like you can have multi-client fraud proofs. Like you could have a ZK proof do a validity proof and a fraud proof, all both work. And if one fails, then the other one is the fallback. You could also have a third fallback as a multi-sig. So there's multiple ways of like kind of solving this, but I think people are kind of currently investigating, like, can you actually really do perfect fraud proofs, and this is kind of the first hurdle, the first like trip in the system that we're kind of like going through as these things become ready for prime time.
So there was a bug in it that doesn't feel great. The part that does feel good is that the Optimism team was able to kind of like push a fix. And so right now, permissionless fraud proofs are disabled. In a few weeks, like I think in early September, they're going to push a patch and re-enable them. But this does bring into the conversation of, the Optimism team, they have the ability to upgrade the code for Optimism. And isn't that a centralization vector? And it totally is a centralization vector. And the reason you need it is because of situations like this. If we had hands off, if the keys were burnt, if there's no way to upgrade the Optimism code, then basically this bug would be kind of like out until you had, a fork of the entire system. It would be a lot messier. So I think it's going to take a long time to fully get these training wheels off. And when you have bugs like this, you kind of like remind yourself, wow, you know, bad stuff can happen. We have to give this years to sort of mature in the ecosystem without issue, without hack, before we like make this fully decentralized with no ability to push an upgrade.
That's right. So the upgrade process will take about 3 weeks, and then a new hard fork scheduled for September 10th will be the first phase of this getting fixed. And that's that. Ready for more pump.fun metrics?
Yeah. Ryan? Yeah. I've been waiting for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Holding your breath. Okay. I know we kind of did a bit like this last week, but some even more data about pump.fun metrics of meme coin traders success. Full meme coin traders have come out. Okay. Say you make like $1,000 on pump.fun. Where do you think if you've made in profit $1,000 from pump.com, where does that place you on like the continuum of successful to not successful traders on pump.fun? Like better than 55%, assuming like base case, 50% of people have lost money, 50% of people have made money. If that's a possibility, where do you think making $1,000 places you?
I mean, $1,000 isn't a lot. And we talked about this a little bit last week. So I feel like I'm more like prepared to make a guess. But it would definitely be under 1%. But still, $1,000 is not a lot. So I would just say that's a pretty low bar, pretty low threshold. I mean, like you just hold a crypto asset for like, I don't know, a few weeks, you can make like, that kind of money on just like something like Tron.
It could go down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So what's the answer to that? Making $1,000 or more, what's that hurdle?
If you make it, if you are in profit on Pump.Fun by $1,000, you are in the top 3% of all people who have ever played on Pump.Fun. If you've made over $10,000, you are in the top 0.5%. If you've made over $100,000, you are in 0.037%. And if you've made $1 million, you are in the top 0.0028% of all wallets, which I think people have started to realize, like, Pump.Fun is not an even playing field. It is a lottery ticket. Like, it's not roulette where, like, you know, you lose some, you gain some. It's not blackjack. It's not investing. The odds are like you default lose, but there's a very small chance that you make a lot of money. And that's actually, I think people are coming to terms with, like, meme coins are kind of like that.
It's also different from a lottery in that if you are positioned to make a lot of money, it's probably because you have some information arbitrage, or you're an influencer, or you're like, you know, like, yeah, one of the devs in the project.
Right.
So it's right. It's not
you
even
created,
like,
created the token.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even like a lottery, which, like, hey, the odds are bad and it's gambling. Everyone knows this, but at least it's like credibly neutral. I mean, there's some randomization of like who wins the lotto ticket. There's not that here, which kind of feels bad, man. It's like, you know,
you never hear anyone about like rigging the lottery numbers. Like, that doesn't happen.
Right. But I guess, you know, the hope that you're going to make $1 million on meme coins is just like not happening for a lot of people. There was a notable release on Pump.Fun, though, this week, David, and that is Grimace Coin. What I have to assume is McDonald's official coin for their lovable
mascot.
Official
legitimate meme coin from McDonald's. What's Grimace, the word Grimace, have to do with McDonald's?
Do you remember this character? This is like early 90s lore, I think. Like this guy,
big purple fuzzy guy.
Purple fuzzy creature. Like, no one's really sure what sort of creature he is or what he's supposed to be. This is Grimace. You know, he used to team up in the early, like late 80s, early 90s with like Ronald McDonald.
Name?
Yeah, his name's Grimace. It's part of like
what
ancient
kind of name
McDonald's
is that,
lore. I don't know. So this is, and what we're looking at right here is the official McDonald's Instagram account. And it says this, a McDonald's experiment on Solana with the eyeball emojis. And then they link to it. And
Solana address.
Yeah, it's a Solana address. And it is the what appears to be, because this is the official McDonald's Instagram account, this appears to be the official McDonald's Grimace coin. They even got pictures of Grimace with Ronald here. And, you know, people are excited, right? So if this is real, this is insanely bullish, is one of the top comments here.
Okay. Okay. So it was launched on Pump.Fun because, of course, the token went up to $20 million market cap before nuking straight back down to below $650,000. The hacker of the obviously, because this is not actually McDonald's.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Okay, this is not the official Grimace coin.
Yeah, this is not the official Grimace coin. There is no official Grimace coin. The hacker of the McDonald's Instagram account, not even the Twitter, the Instagram, got about $700,000 out from this scam. They used Pump.Fun to snap up 75% of the total circulating supply and then spit it out between 100 different wallets and then sold those wallets into the pump that happened. Okay, here's my question. I'm sure both are correct, but what is more correct? People saw this on Instagram and they were like, oh my God, McDonald's is launching an official Grimace meme coin. I have to buy.
Okay.
Or people saw this on Instagram and they saw, oh, the Solana Instagram was hacked. I'm going to go buy this before everyone else, and then I'm going to dump it. which is more correct?
Are you asking me whether innocent people got hurt in this?
Yes.
I have to believe very few innocent people actually got hurt in this. Maybe there's a few out there that are like, hey, I've been waiting my whole life for the Grimace coin on Solana. And they also know how to use like a crypto wallet and are experienced enough to go like from the Solana address, go buy that on Solana exchanges.
You've got the chart pulled up. Can you zoom into the charts? Okay, so we've zoomed into where this token was launched.
It's green candle.
This green candle is a spike at 11:15 a.m. And then it goes all the way back down. Like most of the way back down, it's kind of hard to tell because it's not in log, but like by 12 p.m. So most of the activity happened inside of 45 minutes. Like Our normies who don't know what the what's up with meme coins and pumped-up fun buying this thing inside of 45 minutes because they saw it on Instagram? Or is it people with their finger on the trigger because they're like in the meme coin trenches and they're just like ready to go? I think it's the latter.
I do not think any sweet old ladies got hurt in this, like fortunately. No. Although I will say, I mean, that's quite the price. You go and you hack a corporate social media account and you make a cool 700K. And it's putting quite the price tag on like for all of these hackers
to exploits
make this amount of money.
So on the way out the door after this is all said and done, the hacker of the McDonald's Instagram page edits the Instagram bio and says, "Sorry, my N-word, you have just been rug pulled by India X crew. Thank you for the $700,000 on Solana."
Ooh, just asking for it. That level of hubris, huh? Just asking for
it. Yeah,
there you go. Yikes. That's the legacy of Grimace Coin. Maybe we'll have a real official Grimace Coin at this, like at some point in the future. But it's not.
And
it's
we're
not
all
this
just
week.
Gonna we're all just gonna let it go by because we're gonna be like, that's a scam.
Yeah, and we'll really miss out on the opportunity. All right, let's talk about some raises of the week. This was an absolutely major one, massive one,
monster.
It feels very, very bully.
Largest of the year?
Yeah. So this is announcing $140 million from the Story Protocol. That's the raise amount. That's not the valuation. This is a layer one blockchain called Story, which is the world's IP blockchain. Okay. And some notable investors here. A16Z.
The world's IP blockchain?
Yeah. Balaji, Srinivasan, some notable investors here. The actual, this was actually a Series B, so it was $80 million. So I think they're announcing their bigger amount, which is $140 million total. This amount specifically was $80 million, but they've raised $140 million total. So it's an IP. It's a layer one IP blockchain. I have to admit.
What is an IP blockchain?
Did they
just make that up? They just made that up.
It's programmable IP. So I imagine it's, I don't know, it's things like trademarks.
Programmable IP.
Things like, I don't know, what other IP, they just different copyright licenses, I suppose. Could be patents, you know, programmable IP.
Okay. There,
if you don't have something nice to say, David, there is more information about like the thesis behind this from one of the founders here, Jason Zhao. And then he actually goes through why it had to be a layer one. Apparently, they tried with Optimism first. So they wanted a smart contract protocol. Again, like here's a bull case maybe. IP is just another type of asset. You know, you're a believer, aren't you, David? Aren't all of us that all real world assets will eventually be on chain? So that obviously includes IP. Patents, this kind of thing, licenses to songs, all of this. And they tried to do it in a layer two at first. Turned out they couldn't kind of get that working, wasn't as programmable as they needed. They had to build it from scratch.
What?
And then you have a layer one, the world's first IP blockchain. So you should read the entire...
I have not read this.
You gotta read it.
Some of these premises do not fit inside of my model for how blockchains work.
Yes, I know they don't.
The layer two is as equally as programmable as anything else. Like, there's no loss of programmability because
maybe
of layer
I misstated
two.
That. I mean, like, I've kind of skimmed it. I need to give this more thought too. But that's what's going on. I think your model it doesn't fit in your model because you're probably reminded of, as am I, like chains like Flow, for instance. Remember, Flow is going to be kind of the gaming NFT collectible.
It's like the NFT layer
blockchain
one.
Layer one. Mm-hmm. And that really just hasn't amounted to anything. It was an absolutely massive raise, like during the peak of last cycle. So I think you're probably getting flashbacks or something like that.
That's right.
I don't know. Open mind, I suppose. But that is a massive raise. And we haven't seen the likes of this for a very long time in crypto.
Okay. Since we are talking about IP on the blockchain, this is not the first time that this has been like worked on. This is not the first idea of bringing IP on the blockchain. People out of the DeSci space have just contributed this open source standard called the IP NFT, so intellectual property non-fungible token, to provide a secure and immutable proof of ownership for intellectual property on chain. These tokens ensure the details of IP ownership are unique, transparent, tamper-proof, enabling researchers to asset ownership, raise funds, and monetize IP. This is from like this open source document out of the DeSci community for like a legal smart contract structure to host IP inside of an NFT. And this is an open standard that people have worked on. People in the Gitcoin community have worked on this. Vita DAO, the DAO trying to build like longevity tech in the space, has worked on this as well. So I would also like, since we're talking about IP, I'd also like to point over to that open standard, which exists and is maybe worth your attention as well. Second raise on the week, Sorella Labs raised 7.5 in a seed round to solve MEV on Ethereum and also specifically Uniswap.
Yeah, obviously, like solving MEV is a pretty large like design space here, but they're doing it in a cool way. What are they up to?
So this is specifically around Uniswap in Uniswap V4. They're building a hook to kind of solve the like impermanent loss, the just arbitragers eating away at liquidity inside of Uniswap from largely sex DEX trading. So like since Ethereum has 12-second block times or just any block, any even layer two has slower block times than like, say, Binance, which Binance doesn't have block times. It's just like real time. And so because blockchains lag Binance, LPs and Uniswap get their liquidity nibbled away from sex DEX arbitrage. It's a very big problem. It's one of the reasons why like LPing in Uniswap has not been able to be as profitable as it could be because they're getting eaten by arbitrage bots. So Sorella Labs is building a hook on Uniswap V4 that LPs can deposit their liquidity into Uniswap through the hook. And then traders, if they want to access that liquidity through the hook, have to trade through the hook. And the hook is an extension of Uniswap. It was discussed when Uniswap V4 was announced. It reorders the transactions. It does the MEV, but it points the MEV back into the LP positions rather than giving it to the LP bots. So rather than the LP bots capturing 99% of the arbitrage for the MEV, the hook captures 99% of the MEV and points it back into Uniswap liquidity providers with the goal of trying to make LPing in Uniswap great again. That's the deal.
I mean, I think this is an example of like in the background, the builders are continuing to build and solving some big problems. You remember we were looking at DEX volume a little while ago as a percentage of a total market volume. And right, like when we first got into crypto, you know, at least DeFi was launched, you know, 2019, 2020, there was nothing. There was no activity on DEXs. There's just like it was below 0%. It was below 1%, right? And now we're at about 15%. So 15% of crypto market trading volume activity now happens on DEXs. But that still leaves 85% happening on SEXs. That's where the price discovery is. That's where the deep liquidity is, all of that. If we want to get that to 30% on chain or 50% on chain or completely invert that and get this to like 85% on chain, 15% on SEXs, then you need to make it attractive for capital to locate here and liquidity to locate here. And solving this type of infrastructure problem does that. But anyway, it's bullish. I think we're going to get beyond 15% in the coming years as we solve problems like this, you know, like towards 20%, towards 25%. And then the majority of our trading at some point in the future will be bankless, on-chain, transparent. That's kind of how we solve this, right? Incremental gains like this.
Getting price discovery on chain is like one of the most important landmarks that we can claim as an industry. Yeah. Right now, DEX trading, DEX like on-chain price discovery lives in the shadow of Binance. We need that relationship to invert. We need Binance to respond to what is happening on blockchains, not the other way around. And mechanisms like this, designs like this are crucially important to making that happen.
All right, we got the meme of the week, David. This is not only a meme, it is a Vitalik bull post. Quite literally, what are we looking at here?
Vitalik says, I have been told on Twitter, I have been told that I need to do less philosophizing and do more Ethereum bull posting. Hence, here is an Ethereum bull post courtesy of Stable Diffusion and In Painting plus GIMP. And is a picture of a bull with a sign around its neck saying Ethereum is good.
The traction that this got? Like, I just like so many retweets, so many likes, so much more than
2.5 million views.
Yeah, he said it defeated. He wrote an essay this week, too. I don't know if you got caught up on that. It's a long one. It's like 10,000 plus words.
A long one. And I read about 3,000 of them.
Yeah, this destroyed the engagement of that long post in like just like three minutes, he said. So there's your Vitalik bull post. That's all he's willing to do. He never comments on price, David, does he? Like very rarely.
The last time I saw him comment on price was when Solana was $8, and then he tweeted out, like, I hear there's a lot of really good builders on Solana, and that tweet perfectly marked the bottom of Solana in 2022. Yeah.
What was that other famous tweet? Was this in 2017? Have we earned it tweet? That was the other time I'm recalling of Vitalik commenting on
he top-ticked Ethereum and he bottom-ticked Solana with his two price tweets.
Get this guy a hedge fund,
Vitalik should take up trading. Yeah, for real.
All right, got to end with this. Of course, you know crypto is risky, including meme coins. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us in the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.